Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette, this is Acadiana's number one sports station, 1037 The Game. Streaming live on 1037thegame.com and on the 1037 The Game mobile app. It's game day, and we're going behind the glass with the famous CD.
I don't know how to put this, but kind of a big deal.
The new guy, Blaine Viator. Cody Schutz. It's the producers on 1037 The Game.
Hey, I heard you missed us. We're back.
Welcome, everyone, to the producers right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com. And we are live, as always, from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing, live, as always, from the roof to the roots of Acadiana. 237 Roof is who you need to call. That's 237-7663. But you know what? We're letting the phone lines be open for a little bit in this show because we've got three fantastic guests coming your way today, and I cannot wait to talk to all three of them on the final edition of The Producers. I'll give you a little deets on that in a little bit, but in the meantime and in between time, we'll have Jake Chapman, 10:15, to talk about Greedy Williams going to the Cleveland Browns. He definitely knows a thing or two about those Browns and how they've been able to step their game up, and this may be one of their better picks in quite some time, even though, especially in day two, obviously day one last year, they crushed it. I think we're seeing the Cleveland Browns make things a lot more interesting in the NFL, and that's a great thing. Then right after that, 10:30, Andrew Lopez, a little preview of the World Boxing Super Series going on tonight in the Cajun Dome. I know I'll be out there. I'm almost certain he'll be out there. Regis Prograis, the main event of the evening. We'll talk to him about that and a whole lot more because there's been some things going on with that card I want to talk to him about. I can't wait to check out what's going down this weekend inside the Cajun Dome, what's going to be on tap on that end. And then at 11:30, you know we had to get our guy Ross Jackson aboard. What the Saints have done so far, what the Saints could wind up doing going forward, trust me, there's a lot of directions me and him are going to wind up going. I think we're definitely in lockstep with what the Saints did, and that is an A-plus draft pick in Eric McCoy out of Texas A&M. And for those who haven't necessarily paid a whole lot of attention to the NFL draft beyond the first round, I can tell you right now, the guy that is going to be coming over, the center out of Texas A&M, he is going to be a starter this season. I can almost guarantee you that. You know why? The guy played you-know-what ton of snaps last year. Like I said, Texas A&M. Who did they play last year? They played LSU. In a 7-overtime game, he played 113 total snaps. 67 of those were pass-blocking reps and allowed only one pressure. McCoy is going to be a guy that can bring the heat. He's only allowed like one sack in his entire collegiate career. This dude is an absolute stud. I don't know how he wound up dropping down to 48th overall. But thank goodness, because I was concerned about what was going to happen with the New Orleans Saints because I started seeing some of the targets keep dropping, and they keep getting picked up. Connor McGovern was the guy I know Ben was talking about yesterday, and it did not happen, but I think they wound up looking a lot better with the man they have in place right now. I absolutely love the signing of the rookie draft of Eric McCoy. The guy is so good, and it fills an immediate need at center. I feel like Will Clapp, he can probably develop as a center down the line, but I'd much rather put all my chips into a guy like Eric McCoy out of Texas A&M, a guy that definitely has a pedigree when it comes to being a solid center. Because remember, Max Unger, he's done. He hung up the cleats. I can tell you right now, this is going to be a great matchup this weekend, a great matchup for anybody. He's going to wind up giving you hell if you're a defensive lineman, and he's going to protect the biggest asset the Saints have in Drew Brees. This is an A-plus draft for them so far. Of course, it's only one pick. And I'm not the biggest fan of giving up that 62nd pick and the second round pick next year for one reason only. It's more because of the fact that now more of the onus is on stepping your game up and be able to lock down more guys. You know, I feel like I would have loved to have seen them at least give up most of their 6th and 7th round picks. Just give those up in exchange for that pick. Again, probably wasn't going to wind up happening. He might have wound up having to give it up Andrews Pete to be able to pull that off. Amazed none of that happened last night because everybody was talking about it after the draft, after they drafted Eric McCoy, is the statement about it, are we going to wind up seeing Andrews Pete get traded? It felt like we were just going to be waiting patiently to see if it was going to happen. It didn't, and I'm not surprised, to be honest with you. I think we all should have seen that coming and seen that, you know, Andrews Pete wasn't going to get traded that night. Now, when was he going to get traded? I don't know. You know, I think he probably winds up possibly getting traded today, and that would be a huge drop in stock because you think about it, Andrews Pete a few years ago was a first-round pick, and now they're going to try and get rid of him to avoid that, to avoid paying him that option and all that, and you wind up getting rid of some dead money, basically. But, you know, I think Andrews Pete can definitely still be a worthwhile asset to the Saints, especially when you consider the fact that he knows how to play a couple different positions. I'm not the biggest fan of those kind of guys, like a guard slash center. That's what I'm saying. Like, keep Eric McCoy a center as long as you humanly can. I got to say, I am looking forward to seeing what happens with the Saints and what they do the rest of the draft, because I feel like this one was the home run. Everything else is kind of lanyap at this point, because I don't see a 4th-round pick being a day one starter just on paper. Just on paper. I definitely don't see a 6th or 7th round. We've seen in the past with the Saints being able to pull that off, but it feels easier said than done when it comes to the New Orleans Saints. I am loving what I've seen from them in the first round of the NFL draft. I absolutely have been enjoying the first 2 rounds of the NFL draft, though. A lot of great storylines coming out of it. I think, of course, I talked about the Cleveland Browns a little while ago. They crushed it. They got a steal of a player in Greedy Williams. The man knows how to be one hell of a defensive player in terms of man-to-man aspects. I just love what I've seen from Greedy Williams, and I'm amazed he dropped that far down the line. And yesterday, going back to something I heard yesterday afternoon, was, oh, hey, apparently Arden Key is putting LSU on blast for getting some players' stock to drop significantly. I'm going to tell you this. This is kind of, you know, I would say a little bit of a bitter boy, I would say. It definitely seems that way. It seems like he is definitely still a little bitter over how his draft stock dropped. But here's the thing. I can tell you right now, the LSU Tigers, I feel like last year was a different story when you look specifically at Darius Geis. Darius Geis should have been a first rounder. I feel like maybe it was the fact that he wound up switching agencies midway through the, like before the draft started. He signed with one, then signed with another like a couple weeks later. I think that might have been more the agents for Top Dog Entertainment, I believe, was the original people who were behind this. I feel like those were the ones who were kind of putting the bad vibes out there to cause his stock to drop significantly. It's definitely a cutthroat business in terms of agents. When it comes to Arden Key's statement, I don't think that's true when it comes to the Greedy Williams dropping down to the 2nd round going to the Cleveland Browns. Now, Cleveland Browns, it's not as much of a death sentence as it was in the past few years. It feels like now the Cleveland Browns have a very good chance of making the playoffs for the first time in a long time. And dare I say, I've said it a while back, I think they have a chance to win the Super Bowl. And you have the Cleveland Browns do the one thing the Cleveland Browns need to do, and that is get things done. I cannot wait to see what Greedy Williams does, because I think he's going to wind up down making a lot of people realize, why the bleep did I pass up on him? Because I can tell you this right now. The first round, Greedy Williams should have wound up going in the top 20. And he wound up somehow dropping down to early 2nd round. This guy somehow got passed up by some complete jabrons. Like, JoJuan Williams was the guy who went before him. I guarantee you, JoJuan Williams, you won't hear his name that much in the NFL. I don't think this guy's going to wind up making a whole hell of a lot of impact. I could be completely wrong, and I'd be willing to admit it. But here's the thing. Right here, right now, I think that you see Greedy Williams make a lot more of an impact than the guy that wound up going just before him and a lot of other guys that went before him, because I feel like Greedy Williams is hands down the best corner in the game right now. Coming out of college football, he's the best out of this rookie class. I don't know how he wound up dropping this low. Maybe it's the fact people were concerned about the tackling. But here's the thing. I'd much rather him be a shutdown corner. I don't have to worry about him tackling anybody if he stops everything that is in his way. And you think about it. All throughout training camp this summer, he's going to be alongside OBJ and Jarvis Landry, Baker Mayfield, throwing passes. It's a perfect opportunity to kind of really learn from the best and be able to defend against the best all offseason long. Be able to defend OBJ, Jarvis Landry, defend those guys, David Njoku to a lesser extent. I think this is a great get for the Cleveland Browns largely because this guy is more of a shutdown corner. You don't have to worry about him like tackling anybody. I don't think you have to worry about that because guess what? He can do a lot more than just that. He can definitely be a man-to-man corner. I think that's going to be the biggest thing for the Cleveland Browns is having this guy with a chip on his shoulder because now he knows everybody doesn't think he's that big of a deal. Nobody really is sold on him. I'll tell you right now, this dude is going to wind up being the steal of the draft. Greedy Williams going over there is huge. And also, like I said, three former LSU Tigers. It feels like it's the quota now for NFL teams. Three LSU players per team. You look at Cleveland, Tampa Bay, a prime example of that, is they wound up just getting Devin White with the fifth pick overall, and that's a great pick as well. Mind you, not a fan of it because we're going to have to wind up seeing Devin White whip up on the New Orleans Saints pretty much with a lot of consistency this like going forward, and he's going to be a havoc. But then again, you know, there's one thing the Tampa Bay Buccaneers don't have, and that is offense. Their offense is absolutely putrid. And I think that's going to wind up not mattering nearly as much. But trust me, what we're going to see from Devin White in Tampa Bay is going to be awesome. And also, you don't have the SEC restricting him and suspending him for the first half of a ball game due to targeting. A little throwing shade right there from all the way back in October. We can't not bring up the SEC suspending Devin White before the Alabama game. That was just a bad look all the way around. And I cannot wait. See Devin White, Greedy Williams out there. And again, Eric McCoy is going to be a starter. This is a bold prediction for me, and I think he winds up living up to the hype. This man is going to wind up getting into the NFL, be able to start early, and we'll definitely see him perform at a very, very high level. We're going to go ahead and take a quick commercial break now, then we're going to come back with even more. Next up, we'll have Jake Chapman talking Greedy Williams, the Cleveland Browns, a whole lot more. 10:30, Andrew Lopez, World Boxing Super Series, the big fights tonight at the Cajun Dome. And then also Ross Jackson, All Saints Considered Locked On Saints podcast, talking what the Saints have done in the draft, what they can be doing going forward. You're listening to the producers right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
Let's get back to the must-listen-to Saturday morning sports show, The Producers, with Blaine, Clint, and Cody on 103.7 The Game.
Welcome back to the producers right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com, live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. And now we're going to make our way over to Cleveland, the land where it seems like the Cleveland Browns are starting to get things together and be able to be one of the top dogs in the NFL. And to do that, we got to talk to one of the guys who's over there and covers the Cleveland Browns. He's the producer for 92.3 The Game out in Cleveland. 92.3 The Fan, excuse me, 92.3 The Fan, producer over there, and also the coordinating producer for the Browns Radio Network, and that is Jake Chapman. What's going on, Jake?
Hey, guys. Good morning. What's up?
Not a whole lot, man. It is just an awesome day to be a Cleveland Browns fan, also an LSU Tiger fan, now that Greedy Williams is over there. What was kind of the initial reaction whenever you saw Greedy Williams drop to that point?
Yeah, I mean, once you got to – John Dorsey even said last night, once they got to about pick 40, they ended up trading up to 46 with the Colts to snag him. But he said for about the last six or seven picks, we've been trying to get up to get this guy. You know, you started the day – I mean, I had – a lot of people thought the Browns were going to try to address the secondary, be it a corner or a safety or somebody who could play both. I was thinking Chauncey Gardner-Johnson would probably be perfect for the Browns there at 49. Because I think Steve Wilks is going to want a bit of versatility within that defense. But you figured they were going to address the secondary. And even when day two started, you figured there's no way Greedy was going to make it all the way down to 49. I figured he'd be one of the first guys off the board. Of course, you know, there were corners on the board to start day two that, you know, guys had equal grades on. Byron Murphy, obviously, one of them. And so nobody really expected him to make it that far. And once you got to, a couple picks in and you saw some other corners coming off the board, you know, I would say the entire Browns fan base just started buzzing a little bit. Like, is there a chance we can snag this guy? Because here's the thing with Greedy, you know, not only is he, many will argue, one of the most talented corners and one of the best cover corners in this draft, but he also has the name recognition. A lot of people up here who are just sort of casual fans, A, know him because his name is Greedy and it's very unique, but B, you know, we do watch SEC football quite a bit. I mean, this isn't a guy that we had to go look up and figure out what his deal was. It's, you know, he's one of the best corners in the country and he plays at LSU. So everybody was excited about it. And yeah, it's almost surreal that after years and years and years of the Browns being the Giants and the Cardinals and the Raiders on draft night, like we've seen for the last 24 hours or so, they're finally, you know, they're the team that people are looking at going, how did they get so lucky? How did a guy like Greedy Williams fall to them?
Exactly, and it's weird. Like, Greedy Williams felt like a guy that was going to wind up going, heading into the draft, I had him going in the top 10. I don't know how that wound up dipping down all the way into the 40s. Do you have any, like, idea, like, any inclination as to why he wound up dropping that low?
No, it's probably a better question for you guys. The only thing I can dig up is that teams have questions about his tackling ability, and I'm like, okay, you know, if you're dependent on your corners to be one of your best tacklers, you're doing it wrong. You know, there's a shift going on in the NFL right now. Everybody's running out of sub packages. Everybody wants to have versatility out of their back seven. You want to be able to, I guess mask what you're doing pre-snap and float in and out of different coverages. And, you know, the Browns brought in Steve Wilks, and he was sort of known in Carolina and for that one year in Arizona as a guy who's going to run a whole lot of zone. And so you wondered if they were going to go for like a Justin Lane or a bigger, you know, I guess more Richard Sherman type, more physical guy who might be a little bit more comfortable in zone. But they did this last year. I mean, John Dorsey in this, today's NFL, you need cover corners. That should be, you know, 1A as far as an objective when you're drafting these guys. And Denzel Ward, the only knock on Denzel Ward is he struggles tackling a little bit. So that's my best guess, but I really couldn't tell you. I have no idea how a player like that, because it wasn't just you. I mean, a lot of people had him at least in the top 20, 25. I mean, it was a pretty precipitous drop. But Browns fans certainly, and I think the Browns organization are glad to clean up the pieces.
Oh, definitely. I'm sure they are. Talking right now with Jake Chapman, 92.3 The Fan. And, you know, we're talking about that, like, LSU Tigers, and it feels like the Cleveland Browns are now, I think we're going to officially call them LSU North over here in Lafayette, Louisiana, and the surrounding areas. Because now you've got three LSU Tigers, OBJ and Jarvis Landry. You want to pick it up over the last couple of years. Right now, it feels like just on the offensive side of the football, the Cleveland Browns really can't be touched.
Yeah, and, I was thinking about it yesterday. So the second guy that – I'll tell you a quick story. The second guy they drafted last night was a guy named Sione Takitaki, a linebacker at BYU. And he said it was a great name, and he had a great story. We had the conference call, and he's telling the story about when he got the phone call from the Browns, and he's like, yeah, I was sitting down on the toilet, and all of a sudden I see the phone ring, and it's 216, and I didn't even have to go to the bathroom anymore. I popped up and blah, 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 blah. And I'm thinking, he's telling the story, we're all cracking up, and I'm thinking to myself, how much has changed within a year? And it's really all because of Baker Mayfield. A year ago, that would have, you know, people would have said, oh, the Browns, and a story like that, you know, like they're drafting guys who, you know, I don't know, people would have drawn, people wouldn't have thought it was cute. People would have made bad jokes about it because the Browns have been that terrible franchise that reminds you of going to the bathroom for the last 20 years. And now with Baker Mayfield, everything has changed. I mean, it literally, when he came in and won that Jets game last year in week three, it was like the entire franchise was turned on its ear. And so then when you get the quarterback in place, and you guys know this, now you can go forward and you can grab Odell Beckham Jr. You can trade for Jarvis Landry. It changes everything in the NFL when you have a quarterback. And for 20 years, the Browns were unable to fix that problem. It's ridiculous when you think about it, but they finally got their guy, and Baker certainly changed everything.
Exactly. I have to agree with you. It's definitely Baker Mayfield has been the guy that's changed a lot. And, you know, like right now, of course, we're talking about this. It's April. But what kind of odds would you put on the Browns being able to make the playoffs this season with the amount of talent they have on both sides of the football? Of course, the offense, definitely a dominant part of it. But what's the odds you would want to put in, like, scale of 1 to 10?
Well, I'm a guy, so I'm 35 years old. So I just barely remember the Browns being good in the first place. In the late 80s and early 90s, they took my team away from me for 3 years, and it's been the laughing stock of the league since they've been back in 99 for 20 years now. So I'm a cynic at heart, and I'm trying to tell people around here, tap the brakes a little bit. They could go 9-7 and still have a successful season and miss out on the playoffs, and that can happen. In the NFL, you can lose a couple games by a wonky call or a missed kick or whatever. It's really difficult to win double-digit games in the NFL. So I'm trying to sort of temper expectations both for myself and for people around here, but it's crazy. I mean, people are going nuts about it, and 9-7 is the absolute floor. I mean, the schedule came out a week or two ago, and it was like a celebration. It was like, you know, everybody here in Cleveland was, okay, that's a win, that's a loss, let's do this. And basically everybody settled on 10-6 should be the expectation for the season, which feels a little crazy, but again, I mean, on paper, this is one of the most explosive offenses in the league, certainly. And I think, you know, maybe the reason that we should temper expectations a little bit is because you do have a new coaching staff in there. But even in that regard, Freddie Kitchens is a first-time head coach, but there is a level of continuity because he took over as offensive coordinator last year when they fired Hugh Jackson and Todd Haley. So it's the level of expectations is very high. I think, you know, when you look at the division, still a damn good division. You still have to deal with Pittsburgh. They still have a really good quarterback. Baltimore is a good team. I think they do have questions at quarterback. And the Bengals probably will be a little bit better than people expect them to be. But I would say, you know, I would say they're the favorite to win the division right now. And anything less than 10-6 is going to be a disappointment.
Jake, thanks so much for coming on, my man. We'll talk to you down the road because it feels like the Browns got some stuff, good stuff going on.
Absolutely.
All right, that was Jake Chapman, 92.3 The Fan, producer for Baskin and Phelps, also a part of the Browns radio network. The guy knows what he's talking about when it comes to the Cleveland Browns. Going to go ahead and take a quick commercial break. Be back with even more. Andrew Lopez coming up next. Talk some boxing at the Cage Dome. Can't wait for it tonight. You're listening to a KENS Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
The producers get you ready for the weekend in their own special kind of way.
What's better than this? Guys being dudes.
Now, back to Blaine, Clint, and Cody.
Welcome back to the producers right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com, live from the 237 Roof Studios. And we got to move things over. Instead of talking NFL draft for a little bit, we'll move over to the world of boxing. Big boxing match going on tonight. Regis Progre in the main event tonight, taking on Kirill Relic. I would presume that's how you pronounce his name. And they're taking on each other in the WBSS Super Lightweight Semifinal matchup. I cannot wait to check it out. It'll be live at the Cajun Dome. And to preview it, we got to go over to the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Andrew Lopez has kind of kept an eye on Regis Progre over the last few years. Of course, mainly he covers Pelicans for the NOLA.com, the Times-Picayune. But he ain't afraid to talk a little boxing. What's going on, man?
Nothing much, man. I'm excited to get down to Lafayette tonight. I mean, I can't understate how big this is, in the world of boxing for Lafayette to have this fight. I mean, the other fights in this have been in, like, Tokyo's had a fight, New Orleans has had a fight, I think Berlin had a fight, in London had a fight. I mean, so for this to be in Lafayette tonight, it's pretty much a big deal.
Oh, it's huge. I mean, when you consider the fact that the next fight on May 18th is going to be at the Hydro in Glasgow, Scotland, one of their bigger arenas. And then I know their final last year was in Saudi Arabia in Jeddah. So you have like these big name fights. It's amazing to see what's going on with the sport, with this World Boxing Super Series going on tonight. And of course, the undercard wound up getting a couple of changes. Can you kind of let people know what's going on with that the co-main event, the WBSS bantamweight semifinal matchup?
Yeah, so it was supposed to be Nito Denier against Alani Tete. Tete pulled out, I think, literally Wednesday morning. He wasn't able to. He had a shoulder injury. And this was the number, I mean, Tete is the number three bantamweight in the world. Denier is really he's a future Hall of Famer. I mean, that's how good Nito Denier is. I mean, Nito Denier has fought all around the world. He's been a champion at four different weight classes. He's actually gone back down, I think, for this one. He had been fighting at 126. He goes back down to 118 for this one. But he was supposed to face Vellani Tete. Tete pulls out. And then so now Stefan Young from St. Louis, who's, I think, you know, just trying to get his shot, really is stepping up on 3 days' notice to face a future Hall of Famer. So it's now a semifinal match. It's still going to count. The WBSS is still going to recognize it. And, you know, Denier, he knows he's got to face a southpaw now. He knows he's got to change a little bit of his style. But it's still, you know, changing on 3 days' notice. I mean, he hasn't really had to do this before, so... or actually, he has had to do it before. He realized this in the middle of the press conference the other day. He thought it was his first, and then his wife from the crowd like waves at him and corrects him and tells him it's his second. So it's the second time he's had to do this in his career. But he's still going to fight. But getting able to see a guy like Denier is such a treat, and I'm glad that they were able to get a replacement instead of scrapping that card.
Yeah, that would have been a mess trying to scrap the semi-main event, especially with Denier, one of the biggest names in boxing. But Stefan Young, the guy, this is an opportunity. I saw this kind of pop up a lot the last few days. This is probably the closest thing we're going to get to like a real-life Rocky at the Cajun Dome tonight.
Yeah, I mean, this guy has really he was supposed to be on the undercard. He was going to be here anyway. I mean, that's why he's here. So, but it's a weird thing. I mean, the guy's like 18-1-3. He's got three draws. He's only got seven knockouts. He is not that big of a fighter. He doesn't have like a signature win or anything like that. But, you know, he's trying to get here, and to just get thrown in like this, I mean, you gotta give this guy credit for what he's doing. I mean, not only is he taking just a fight on 3 days' notice, he's fighting Nito Denier, who, like I said, he's won titles at four different weight classes. He's going back down to 118. I think he went as high as 126. I mean, Nito Denier is going to be in the Hall of Fame, and you're taking this fight on 3 days' notice. So this is his shot to, you know, go out there and make some noise.
Talk right now with Andrew Lopez, NOLA.com, the Times-Picayune, and now we got to look at the Progre fight. I absolutely love how Progre handled things saying, I'm going to knock his ass the bleep out. That is just amazing. Him just coming out the gates, bringing that up, being a native of Louisiana. The guy just, I absolutely love the way the guy fights. Undefeated, 19 KOs, and I've seen him fight many a time on TV. Can't wait to check him out live.
Yeah, it's, Regis is, once Regis, I think, gets out of this tournament, he's going to be a bigger name. I think Regis does win this. I think Regis wins the championship. He's going to leave this with two belts, and he can either go to 147 and try to get some bigger fights at welterweight, or he can stay at 140 and try to get all the titles and then move up. You know, it would probably take him two more fights after that, but I think once he starts getting fights in Vegas and things like that in a couple of years, people are really going to start to realize how much of a star I think Regis can be. You know, he's planning to move out to L.A. He's going to get some kind of some West Coast fights soon. But he's really got, I think, the advantage over Relic. Relic is a little bit bigger, even though I think the weights came in yesterday around the same. Relic, I think, is just a natural bigger guy. So I think when they get in the ring tonight, Relic will probably weigh a little bit more. But this is all about Regis, and this is Regis' time to shine. This whole tournament has been designed for Regis. You know, the first round was in New Orleans. This round is going to be in Lafayette. The final is going to be somewhere big. You know, this is all about Regis, and you know, he couldn't knock out Terry Flanagan in the first one. I would think he's had that power before, so we'll see how Relic takes that going in today.
Hey, you bring that up. How crazy is that Progre has been able to fight, whenever you look at the World Boxing Super Series, been able to fight inside the state of Louisiana? And that's just amazing. How fortunate is that for a guy like that?
You know, it's really kind of helped him in the last year and a half kind of, I think, get comfortable. I mean, he's had multiple chances. He fought back in July of last year. And then again in October, both of those were at the UNO Lakefront Arena. He can get the Smoothie King Center or anything like that. And there were some other reasons why he couldn't do that. They were supposed to, I think, be back there for this weekend. Then when they picked this date, New Orleans was like, well, we got Jazz Fest, so we're not going to be able to get that done. And then Lafayette kind of stepped up like, hey, we got festival this weekend. Well, yeah, cool, come fight, we're fine. You know, you can come here and do it. For him, it's halfway between his birthplace in New Orleans and then where he lives in Houston. He never came back after Katrina. But this is his shot. I mean, he's going against a guy who, you know, he wants to knock a Relic out tonight, but, you know, Relic's, both of his losses have been by decision. Both of his losses have been within his last five fights. He lost to Rancis Bartholomew and then beat Rancis Bartholomew the fight after that by chasing him around the ring, and then he just gets thrown into this fight. So, you know, Regis is going to be the favorite tonight, and it's going to be, quite the event down there in the Cajun Dome.
And, you know, like these, we were talking about the two kind of main matches on the card, but there's an undercard, correct? Because I think there's going to be a lot of notable matches that you're going to want to see on the undercard.
Yeah, you're going to get a lot of local flavor on the undercard. I mean, that's something that that Regis is very high on. When he was in New Orleans, he gave a lot of guys their first big shot. I know Guy Zero is going to be on that card tonight. A lot of the undercard is going to have some New Orleans flavor, aside with some guys that Lou de Bellin and people in his promotion want to get out there. So it's going to be a night. It's going to be, a lot of good boxing overall, outside of just having, Regis and then the Nair fight.
I'd have to agree with you, man. And now, you know, before I let you go, I'm going to just kind of switch things up a little bit for just a moment. Because, of course, you cover the Pelicans on a day-to-day basis. How great is it to kind of see what's going on with David Griffin as the new GM for the Pels? I know we mentioned a while back that he was definitely a home run. He wound up winning the press conference. What can you say about what kind of potential the future of the Pelicans is with him kind of at the helm?
Man, I'll tell you what, dude. It is refreshing to see what he's doing out there. And he's going after some big names. He's going after Trent Redding right now, who is the number three guy with the Clippers. But he wants him to come here and be his number two. The big thing we learned yesterday is he's apparently going after the Phoenix Suns training staff. I mean, that in and of itself is incredible. You know, that is a training staff that it rejuvenated the careers of Shaquille O'Neal and Grant Hill, and Steve Nash got some extra years out of that. I mean, they were featured in an ESPN series not too long ago. They are considered the top training staff in the NBA, and, you know, Griffin wants to go after them. He is going to make this he's going to try and make this a premier destination, and he's going to, with Benson behind him 100%, you know, this is, you know, the Pelicans could be set to make some moves for their, you know, in the near future.
Andrew, appreciate you coming on, my man. I'll see you tonight at the boxing match.
I'll see you there, man.
All right, that was Andrew Lopez. You can follow him on Twitter at _Andrew_Lopez on Twitter. If you love the Pelicans and if you love boxing, this guy has you covered. And I really just can't wait for the fight tonight. It is going to be one heck of a time. And by the way, again, I absolutely love the fact that Regis Prograis during the press conference said, I'm going to knock his ass the bleep out. That is strong to quite strong, bringing that out. And of course, you know, you can fill in the blank there when it comes to what was said in the bleep part. But trust me, I absolutely loved it. And now, ladies and gentlemen, the Artco Equipment Hotline, it is wide open. And guess what? We're going to take your calls. 337-706-0111, the Artco Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. Call me up. Give me your thoughts on what the Saints did with the draft, Greedy Williams, and whatever else you want to get into right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com. The last ride of the producers coming up next.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette, this is Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game. Streaming live on 103.7thegame.com and on the 103.7 The Game mobile app. It's game day, and we're going behind the glass with the famous CD.
I don't know how to put this, but I'm kind of a big deal.
The new guy, Blaine Viator.
People
Cody Shoots. It's the producers on 103.7 The Game.
Hey, I heard you missed us. We're back.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the producers right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com. Live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing, from the roof to the roots of Acadiana. All you got to do is call us up at call them up, 237 Roof, 237-7663. But if you want to call us up and talk some Saints draft, LSU baseball, whatever you want to talk about, I'm willing to take it whatever direction you want to go, 337-706-0111. And I am absolutely looking forward to this weekend. We got everything going on. The Saints draft going on, final day of that. We got 5 picks to choose from. And then whenever you look at kind of the world of college baseball, LSU Cajuns, that's fun. Cajun softball being dominant as all get out. I'd say hashtag as expected. They're looking really, really good. And I'm looking forward to seeing everything that's going on tap today involving the world of sports. Boxing late tonight. Definitely going to be a busy day and a busy night for me, and I'm looking forward to it. Honestly, I cannot complain. I am absolutely loving it because guess what? I don't mind, like, doing different things. And I mentioned this yesterday with Horchak who's filling in for Jordy Holtberg, was that I absolutely love crossing things off the list. And one of the things I've always wanted to do is go to a boxing match. And this is probably one of the biggest boxing matches that's going to come to Lafayette, Louisiana, with the Progre fight being the main event. And I absolutely have enjoyed the hell out of watching college baseball all season long. But I feel like I say that at the same time, I'm just not a fan of what's been going on with Cajun baseball, because they have just been, I wish I could just say suboptimal, but no, it's been absolutely awful. Why am I hating on them? Because it's just, I cannot stand watching a team lose the way they're losing. You know, five straight games they've lost. And yes, you lost to UT Arlington. That's okay. You know, I can live with losing UT Arlington in a three-game set, getting swept by them, because they're a damn good team this year, and it's surprising. La Tech, Anyways, you lose the midweek game, is what it is. That happens. That's what happens from time to time. And then, of course, we've got, obviously, the loss last night to Texas State, allowing 9 runs in the 5th inning. As somebody who's watched the Cajuns baseball team for a long, long time, I'm frustrated with this team. I don't know what's going on. I feel like we need to see something, but I feel like we're just not seeing anything. Looks like we got somebody on the Arco Equipment Hotline. For what it's worth, I am running the show and also hosting the show, so a little easier said than done, but it looks like we got somebody. Let's see who we got. Who's on the line?
This is Ken.
Oh, Ken, what's up, brother?
Mark, how you doing?
I'm doing good, man, doing good. What you thought about the Saints draft pick last night?
Well, I like it. I mean, I like what they're doing, McCarr. That's a big-time pick. We needed that. And like you said, Unger is gone. And, you know, we need to do some things to ensure that offensive line. So that's pretty good. I like that. I like that the fact that the Cleveland Browns got Greedy Williams. You know, unless he has some off-the-field issues, I don't understand how he dropped to the second round. And, you know, the LSU connection there with Jarvis Landry, Odell Beckham, Greedy Williams, I mean, it's going to be tremendous hype for the Cleveland Browns. I think they'll be shown on TV more than any time in the history of the Cleveland Browns.
I'd have to agree with you, Ken. You know, let me just ask you this. Do you think there's like a conspiracy theory going on with the LSU Tigers? Because now it seems like you've got NFL teams as like a quota where you get a maximum of 3 LSU players on a team. It feels like the way we've just seen it, you look at Tampa Bay, you look at Cleveland now, they got 3 LSU Tigers on the roster. Do you think it's just the NFL saying, hey, you can only have 3 LSU Tigers per team?
Well, I don't know about that, but I know one thing. LSU has the most players in the NFL, so there
they
must
do.
Be something to that. So, I mean, but I love it. I love it. It represents the university, the players, the coaching staff, all that. I love it. And you know, I'm not a Cleveland Browns fan. Of course, I'm a Saints fan.
Yeah.
But I will be tuned in to the Cleveland Browns this year because of the LSU connection. And finally, you know, until somebody proved to me that they can beat the Warriors in 7-game series, I'm not buying no other team but the Warriors.
I think I'd have to agree with you right there, Ken. Appreciate the call. Looks like I got somebody else behind the line, and we're gonna try and get to it right now. Caller number 2, you're on the air. I guess not. I guess they waited just a little bit too long, and definitely something really cool. I have to say, I just absolutely love the fact that I'm getting some calls. 337-706-0111, Arco Equipment Hotline. Had that dial tone. Whoever you are, dial tone, call us back up. 337-706-0111. And here's something interesting I just saw pop up. And, you know, we got former Maryland quarterback and then highly rated JUCO QB, Braden Hawkins. He actually visited UL recently and said he loved the visit and loves what Billy Napier is doing, and he plans on visiting again. And I think this might be interesting a little bit down the line, but, man, I have to say, Cajuns football recruiting, it never, ever sleeps, and I can't wait to see what's going to happen with them. It's definitely going to be It's going to be interesting to see what happens going forward from that aspect. That being said, I got to go back to what I was talking about with the Cajuns, because I've watched them for a long time. I can remember watching them when I was in middle school, high school, college years, everything in between, and watching them as a media member of the media. I don't think I've ever seen a team that was just this, like, consistently inconsistent. The hitting is very much, like, you either have it or you don't some games. And last night they had it, but guess what? You weren't able to cash in on opportunities. 13 players left on base. You had a couple bases loaded opportunities to kind of just start clearing things up. And yes, they want to make it in a 10-9 ball game, but the Cajuns just could not finish the job. And that's not how you're going to wind up getting things done if you want to win in the Sun Belt and, more importantly, win that tournament that's coming up in just a few weeks' time. I think this is not a good look for the Louisiana Raging Cajuns. And I think it is time to hit the panic button. I'm a person who doesn't like to hit the panic button when it comes to sports because I can't hit the panic button after a certain point. But I'm hitting the panic button right now because of the fact that I believe the Cajuns, Yul Monroe's two games back in the cellar. And that'd be a point where the Cajuns are never really in that part. They're never really a team that is in the cellar. They were preseason selected to win the West. I don't know what's going on with this team. Sure, you can account to some of it being injuries. I'm not saying it's not injuries, because injuries are there. There's facts there. I just feel like at the end of the day, what I'm seeing from the Louisiana Raging Cajuns is a lot more than injuries. It's inconsistent hitting. The bullpen has become an absolute eyesore on this team. You look at what's happened, late innings. That's been what's killing the Cajuns all season long. More importantly, I'd say it's been costing them throughout these last couple series. The back end of ball games, you're allowing a ton of runs. These three-run innings that head coach Tony Robichaud talks about, and he talks about all the time. It feels like coach speak, but guess what? There is facts and data behind it. 7-18 whenever they allow three runs in an inning. Now, mind you, some of those games, like Texas, the Texas game to wrap up that series to open up the year, that was a little different. And you wound up losing most of those. McNeese was just a very, like, I feel like the McNeese game, the Little Rock game, were two, like, very much anomalies in this because both these teams put up, like, a certain amount of runs. But outside that, it felt like everything kind of went the way it's supposed to go. You know, you look at those series, a couple of those you wound up winning because, well, you wound up scoring a few more runs. I absolutely am not a fan of what's going on with this team. 7-18 heading into this weekend, or heading into this week, actually, because I put this together on Monday, three-run innings. I believe now it's 7-20 in three, whenever they allow three-run innings. Now, think about that. That's 27 games in the season where they've allowed three runs or more, and they have not won but seven of them. I feel like they should be allowing a lot less than three-run innings, like, compared to, like, 7-20. If they allow that many runs in a game, they're not winning. Spoilers. I'll tell you that right now. That is not winning baseball. And I think a lot of that has to do with the bullpen. The bullpen has become an eyesore. You don't have a guy that's like a Dylan Moore anymore. And you know that it is what it is. You just don't have a true closer ready to go. It's always a great thing to have, but when you don't have it, it is a pain in your backside. And the front end pitching, it's really good. Brandon Young, not necessarily his best night, but it was still pretty darn good. I feel like for the most part, the Cajuns pitching staff has an issue, and I wish I could figure out exactly what that issue is. Maybe it's the fact there's young arms and they're hurting. I mean, of course, you got Gunnar Leje. Gunnar Leje is out for the weekend, and I say honestly, and this is not even a statement against Gunnar Leje, but honestly, he's got, what, 3 weeks left of the season and likely of his collegiate career. Let him sit out the rest of the year. I'd be more than happy with it. Just basically go clean your hands of it. Because guess what? There's no way that you're going to wind up getting him back on the diamond, on the bump, as a starter, a closer, what have you. It's not worth it. Let him sit down for the rest of the year. I know he would want to. Not he would love to play every single game. But guess what? It's just not worth it, at least to me. I could be completely wrong, depending on who you talk to. I'm wrong about a lot of things. I want to admit it. But it just feels like, I'd say right now, Gunnar Leje should just be sat down, and his season is c'est tout fini. It looks like the Saints are on the clock. They just traded up to 105, and we're going to try and keep up with it. In fact, I'm just going to go ahead and take a quick commercial break, come back, and we'll fire off the draft sounder, and we'll come back and let you know what the Saints did. We'll be back with more right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
Now, returning to the only show bringing you weekly appearances from the Coach Foe. Clint may have to step out when he gets here. They really don't like each other. It's the Producers on 103.7 The Game.
Welcome back to the Producers right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com. And there has been a trade almost immediately. New Orleans Saints select with, I believe, the 100 in a first overall pick, somewhere along those lines. But it's the third pick in the fourth round of the NFL draft. They traded with the New York Football Jets. And guess what? They got a safety out of Florida. Sticking with the SEC theme. I absolutely love it. And that is Chauncey Gardner-Johnson. Here's some measurables for you. 5'11", 210, and he's got a pretty decent wingspan. His hands, 9 1/4 inches, definitely solid. But, of course, I think definitely interesting is the prospect grade, according to NFL.com. This is kind of come up rapid fire. 5.92, and that is how they grade is, that's a chance to become an NFL starter. Combine results, I'm not necessarily going to kind of bore you with. But he wound up looking really good in his junior season. He was the game's MVP in the Outback Bowl. And he wound up he tied for the team lead with 3 interceptions in the 13 games he played last year. And I have to say, it's awesome to kind of see this guy perform at a very high level. This is going to be fun to see what this guy does. 71 tackles, 4 interceptions last year. Let me correct myself there. And he wound up have 2 interceptions in the Peach Bowl last year against Michigan, the 105th overall pick. Coming out of the University of Florida, who is also a Gainesville native, wound up being a USA Today All-Florida selection as a high school senior. I am absolutely loving this. And again, NFL.com compares him to Nate Allen. I am 100% interested in what happens with that pick. I'm trying to get the info on what's going on with the trade, what happened there, because, again, the Saints sure love to trade up in the draft. I don't know if Mickey Loomis talked about it earlier in the week, and my goodness, I think this is a solid pickup, to say the least. It's not as solid as your boy Eric McCoy, but safety was a position of need. I feel like it was a position of need, not necessarily – he's not necessarily going to be your star safety, but guess what? It adds a lot of depth to it. So that position, he can wind up being a solid starter. You want to have 71 tackles, 9 for a loss, 3 sacks, and a team-high 4 interceptions. As a freshman, he was the Outback Bowl MVP. The guy is an absolute stud from the jump. It's solid, and I'm looking to see what's going to happen. And, of course, I mean, this is all about Patrick Robinson potentially being out for the year. We'll talk with Ross Jackson about this pick and hopefully not any more picks, because I don't want it to be like a rapid fire kind of day where they're just trading up all the way, giving up all the other picks and moving forward. Still trying to keep an eye on what's going on with this, see what the Saints traded for and whatnot. Hopefully we can get some info about that sooner rather than later. Kind of trying to check that out right now. While doing a show, it is interesting. They traded up again. Of course, they traded up earlier. In terms of the trade at this time, we're not yet known. This is courtesy of our guy, Luke Johnson. And my goodness, I am absolutely loving the fact that we're just all over the place here on a Saturday morning. Because guess what? That's the perfect way to kind of put it into the producers, of course. This is the final episode of the producers. But don't worry, Under the Dome with CD will kind of be the same thing. There'll be some similarities. But the only difference is it'll be me every single week flying solo dolo. Arco Equipment Hotline wide open, 337-706-0111. Looks like we got somebody on the line. Hey, let's get to it. You're on the air. What's up? I love it. Mr. Dialtone, why, oh, why did you do this? There's a quick pick analysis coming up from NFL. Say this is a great value because he can line up anywhere in that defensive backfield, and he could wind up being a huge pickup. And now the Saints' next pick isn't until the sixth round, pick number 177. All right, the details are out. Let me kind of give you what's going on. The Saints trade details to get Chauncey Gardner-Johnson. They gave up the fourth and fifth round pick. Now they're only going to be picking in the sixth round and then the seventh round. So, honestly, I'm kind of glad we can just wait and wait and wait. Oh, wait, they got that 177th pick, so they'll be waiting in the sixth round. I guess we'll be waiting a while to see what happens next with the New Orleans Saints. But this is a solid pickup, I would say, for the Saints. This is a guy that can wind up being a starter for this team, especially with Patrick Robinson being out. I'm looking forward to it. Hopefully you are as well. 337-706-0111. This is coming from the Pro Football Focus, saying that he wound up having the draft class highest grade from the slot amongst SEC defenders, allowing a 45.4 passer rating on throws into his coverage. That's huge when it comes to having a guy like that. But again, I guess it. I'm just not a fan of them trading up every. It feels like every draft they do that, they do it multiple times. But I think the ones they've done this year, they've done a lot of research and they've done their work to get a guy like that in place. And he's going to be fun to see. Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, safety out of Florida. And man, the trades just keep happening left and right. But yeah, so far, Saints have made two picks. I think they nailed on both of them. Chauncey Gardner-Johnson is a name that's not necessarily that well known, but I think he winds up being a huge asset for the New Orleans Saints going forward. Of course, outside of the Saints draft news, we got LSU baseball, very up and down year for them, and it just keeps on happening. It felt like maybe Cole Henry would have gotten a start this weekend, but, you know, Cole Henry, arm tightness, which seems to just be an epidemic in college baseball. And this one was just another example of why that hurts, because you could have Cole Henry starting, you probably wound up having a solid performance up against a pretty good Alabama team in a hitter's park, because that's definitely what Alabama's stadium is. And they wound up just looking absolutely awful. Awful. 6-1, two home runs allowed by Zach Hess in the first inning, definitely being a big reason why Alabama was able to roll. You didn't score a run until the ninth inning. That's why they're losing games left and right, the way they're losing it, because the offense has been very much hit or miss. I think that's definitely been the thing. It's been a hit or miss offense all season long. And it's tough. Like, I'm not going to lie. Like, it's disappointing to see where this LSU team has gone from being a team that feels like Omaha or bust is the mentality this year. And I think they definitely still have a chance to do so. But you have to win the next two games. And that feels easier said than done. Eric Walker is your next hand. He's a reliable hand. But then you got TBA because Cole Henry's out. But Cole Henry would have been a Saturday starter. You had a Zach Hess move back to the bullpen starting next week, it seems like. Unless somehow Cole Henry still can't pitch. I don't know how they're going to wind up winning 2 out of 3 this weekend. I don't know how they're going to do it. I mean, they've done it before. Don't get me wrong. They've been absolutely horrible on Friday nights. But maybe they can bounce back, get things done on Saturday and Sunday, win the 2 out of 3, and really start setting up for success in the month of May, where they've been able to make their hay in the past and step their game up. I want to see them do really well. Hopefully, they wind up doing just that and performing at a very high level. We're going to go ahead and take a quick commercial break. Hopefully, the New Orleans Saints don't make any more picks, don't trade up anymore, He's honestly, I want to get through the Ross Jackson interview all in one full stop. I'm sure you wouldn't mind that either. Gonna go ahead and take a quick commercial break. Be back with more. You're listening to the producers right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
Peaks on Johnston is the ultimate.
Your Saturday morning never truly gets started until the producers take over the airwaves.
Like it or not?
Not.
We are taking over.
Now let's get back to Blaine, Clint, and Cody.
Welcome back to the producers right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com. And who they want? Well, who that wants to get Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, Eric McCoy, and they don't mind trading up to do it. And let's go to the ARCO Equipment Hotline right now. Talk with Ross Jackson of All Saints Considered. What is going on, brother?
What's up? Yo, I'm really, really excited about how this is all panning out so far.
Look, I absolutely love it. We're going to start things off looking at the pick that the Saints got last night, and that is Eric McCoy. And I have to say, I was surprised he dropped down that far. He felt like he was going to wind up being a late first-round, early second-round pick, and the Saints wound up snatching him up. Why don't you give the people a little information about how good this guy can be?
Yeah, man. Look, this guy was never supposed to be there for the Saints at 62. Nevertheless, he wasn't even supposed to make it to 48, which is where they ended up trading up to. So the Saints knew coming into round two that McCoy was the guy that morning when they came in. They said, this is who we want. This is who we're willing to trade up for. They knew they'd have to trade up, and they were happy to do it. They gave up their 62nd overall pick, their second-round pick. They basically just swapped. They gave up a 2020 second-round pick, which we expected to be spent at some point in round two or three anyway, and then also round six, pick 202, their second of their round six picks. So they moved up there. They also got pick 116, which we'll talk about in a little bit. But with pick 48, they ended up getting Eric McCoy, center out of Texas A&M. Now, he's played 39 total games in his collegiate career, started all 39 games the 3 years that he was there at Texas A&M, played 37 of them at center, two at left guard, has the ability to mobilize, but they specifically told him, and this is what he told the media, that their vision for him is playing center. And that's a fantastic get because it opens up a ton of versatility along that Saints offensive line with whatever decisions they have to make all throughout the season.
I have to agree. I think it's definitely going to be a big thing. Eric McCoy, you brought up, he's a three-year starter. I think, obviously, many fans in the Acadian area know about one start he had in particular, a seven overtime ball game. It's safe to say this cat got stamina.
Absolutely. And you can look at him. He can be effective over that insane amount of time all throughout a single game. But also, I mean, starting 39 games, starting 13 games a year as – as a collegiate player on the offensive line where you're getting, people are punching you in the throat, you're getting beat up every day. He's punching people in the throat through all four quarters. He played 1,441 offensive pass snaps and allowed a single sack his entire 3 years at Texas A&M.
And that is amazing. Talking right now with Ross Jackson, All Saints Considered. And like I said, he only allowed one sack in his collegiate career. That is amazing, and it's just got to make you feel really good about the center position now for the Saints.
Yeah, absolutely. There was so much concern swirling around it because of the retirement of Max Unger, which the Saints knew about before the public knew about, of course, so they were prepared. The next day, they signed Nick Easton, who also has versatility but didn't play at all in 2018 with a neck injury. So you've got this guy that can play at center but can also play at left guard and Easton, and then you bring in Eric McCoy, who specifically you brought in to play center. And now you have all of this flexibility, this versatility all over the line. If Teron Armstead gets hurt and Pete has to bounce out to the left tackle position, no longer are two or three of your positions at the offensive line weak. You have Eric McCoy at center, who is a plug-and-play play starter. And then you've also got Nick Easton, who can plug in at left guard. So depending on what it is, you know, in terms of how quickly he learns the vocabulary, how quickly he learns the protections, he could be a plug-and-play guy. They're going to give him a shot at the starting job this first season here in 2019. So they'll give him that shot. And then Nick Easton ends up being a very valuable backup piece who didn't cost a lot of money. His total contract is $22.5 million, which makes him the 12th paid highest center in particular. But he's basically only got $4 million guaranteed, two of which are his base salary, two of which were his signing bonus. So he's on a one-year $4 million contract, basically. So you're protected. You have a lot of flexibility for years to come moving ahead with this offensive line.
You know, now we got to look at the second pick that the Saints wound up getting, trading up yet again to get a safety out of Florida. Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, I think the beauty of this is they won't be picking again until a couple more hours. I was hoping we wound up just getting that one pick out of the way. That gives us a lot more to talk about. But Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, a safety. Have you done any research on this guy yet to kind of determine what kind of role he's going to have with this team?
Oh, yeah. He's a fantastic, fantastic player. And I know he's a safety, and safety's not a big need for the Saints. But this guy was, you know, widely considered to be a first or second round pick. And so getting him by trading up to 105 is fantastic. They open up, they reopen their relationship with the New York Jets, who they traded with last season as well to get Teddy Bridgewater. And so you get somebody like Chauncey Gardner-Johnson in New Orleans, who plays, again, a ton of positions on the defense and also has special teams value. But the special teams value isn't what sells me on him. What sells me on him is the fact that he can play single high safety. He can play in the box. He can play the Von Bell role. He can play a nickel safety. He played what Florida called the star position in their defense all last year. And so he was playing essentially as a nickel corner in run support as well as guarding either slot receivers, tight ends, or running backs out of the backfield. And he has the ability to do all that. That 4.48 speed that he has shows he gets sideline to sideline. You can see that when he plays the single high safety role. He just has a lot of versatility. He can fit in a lot of places. And he's going to end up being a valuable asset for the Saints for a few years because, look, Von Bell is entering the last year of his contract this year because he doesn't get a fifth-year option as a second-round pick. So he could potentially slide into Von Bell's position if Von Bell and the Saints, for some reason, for whatever reason, can't reach a deal, which I don't think is entirely likely. The other part of it is that Patrick Robinson is here for another year, and he's on a four-year contract, but he has an out after this season. And so all of his guaranteed money is gone. So if they need to move on from him because he continues to be injury-prone, let's say, they have somebody that can plug in to that slot position. P.J. Williams this year might miss some games because he had the DUI over the offseason. So if you do that, you still have valuable nickel depth at your defensive back position with Chauncey Gardner Jr.
All right, now not gonna ask you the tough question here. Do you like the Saints trading up the way they've been doing in the past, or are you just it doesn't matter to you?
It doesn't matter to me because, look, what we learn here, and I talked to Tyler McClatchy of Altered Considered about this yesterday on our podcast. We were talking about, you know, people are really upset about the Saints giving up a second-round pick for this to move up for Eric McCoy. But put into, you know, consider the prospect that Eric McCoy is and what he has the ability to do. We've talked about that. But, look, if the Saints have a 2021 second-round pick, which they do, they've got a 2020 second-round pick as far as I'm concerned. The Saints are going to move. That's what they do. That's what the MO has always been. The Saints have traded up in every single draft since Sean Payton has been there, with the exception of 2006, his first year, and then 2012, the suspension year. This isn't out of the ordinary. They've continued to make it work. They're a Super Bowl contender now, so obviously it's not really throwing off their groove, if that's what the concern might be.
What would you grade the draft so far based off of these two picks?
So far, just off of these two picks, I'd probably go B plus to an A. I'd say B plus. The reason why I go B plus is because there's still some spots that they haven't gotten the chance to address yet that, you know, with there could have made a couple of different options. There was always the option of trading back or using that 62 pick to make a selection there and then trading up with just the future pick and then finding another way just to get into the third round. Things, there's some other different choices that could have been made, so they could have sort of spread the love in terms of what these picks are. But if you just look at these two picks and sort of in a vacuum, that would boost me up to an A. I love what they're doing so far. They're going after the guys that they like, and they're going after guys with the functional versatility like they've always gone after. And so this is really shaping up well for the Saints.
It really is. It's just such a great moment right now for Saints fans. You know, you brought up they still haven't addressed some needs. What's the biggest needs they're going to wind up addressing with their last few picks in the sixth and seventh rounds?
Well, thankfully, I mean, in order to move up to 105, they packaged their 116, which is the pick that they got in the first trade, and their 168, which was their pick in the fifth round. But they pick only 9 selections later at 177. So they didn't really lose a lot of traction there. So they can still very much address defensive tackle. At that point, Ronnell Wren is still on the board. You've still also got Kingsley Keke, who can play both inside and outside, which would also give you some rotational ability alongside Marcus Davenport on the edge, as well as another person that can play that 3-technique role that they don't really yet have on the defensive line in place of Sheldon Rankins. So still, defensive tackle is a big one that I see them looking at, and then probably wide receiver a little bit later, somebody like David Sills or Anthony Ratliff Williams, potentially, who also brings in some special teams value.
Definitely looking forward to seeing what the Saints do the rest of the draft. And, you know, we just look at this team right now, especially more so the offensive line. I feel like that's the big thing. How do you see this offensive line shaping up for the first game of the regular season?
Right now, the way that I'm seeing it is with the assumption that what we've heard is true, which is that Eric McCoy has been brought in to play offensive line, to play center, that he's going to be a plug-and-play guy. I see him at center, Andres Pete at left guard, Tron Armstead at left tackle, and then you've got Larry Warford at right guard and then Ryan Ramczyk at right tackle. And honestly, with the way that that shapes up, with Nick Easton as depth, Will Clapp, Cameron Tom, all those guys as depth, you're in a really good position to where you won't see what happened last year happen again this year because of that depth, because of the backup plans, the contingencies that they'll now have. They're a little bit more protected and matted if somebody gets hurt, and then you really won't see the offensive line play decline throughout the season like you saw last year.
Ross, thanks so much for coming on, my man. It'll be a while before we talk to you again, of course. I think we'll talk to you once we get training camp kickstarted. But for those who want to kind of keep an eye on what's going on with the Saints as we kind of trudge through the offseason, you got mini camps coming up. Why don't you let them know where to follow you at?
That sounds great. And looking forward to all of that. Y'all can follow me over on Twitter at Ross Jackson ASC. Of course, make sure you check out the website at allsaintsconsidered.com. And then, of course, check out the podcast at Locked On Saints. You can find that on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, everywhere, as well as the new Himalaya podcast app as well. So you can check all of that out. Cliff, I look forward to next time, man. Thanks so much for having me back throughout the draft season. I'm looking forward to this training camp getting started with the season, man.
I think everybody is, man. I appreciate it once again, Ross. And we got to. Man, I am just absolutely loving what the Saints have done so far. Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, not exactly a like big name off the top of the head, but he's definitely a guy that can wind up being a big deal for the New Orleans Saints in the not-too-distant future. Surprisingly, Foster Moreau still on the board. According to NFL.com, he's the highest-rated player at the position available, and it's just, like, how has that happened? You know, it feels like he should have been picked up day two as well. It feels like LSU players are just sliding down the draft board and their value goes down significantly. I don't know why. It's a little strange. But we got to go ahead and take a quick commercial break. Be back with even more. You're listening to the producers right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com, and also the free mobile app presented by Visit Avery Island.
The producers are willing to break down all the rumor and innuendo to get your weekend kickstarted. Chat them up at 337-706-0111. Now, back to Blaine, Clint, and Cody.
How do I say goodbye to what we have? The good time that made it last.
Welcome back to the producers right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com. And this is the end of the road. It's so hard to say goodbye. I'm going to try and not make as many Boys to Men references, but the show, it is coming to an end. The producers on 103.7 The Game. But don't worry, I'm still going to be here on Saturday mornings for the foreseeable future, but it'll be under a whole different name, Under the Dome with CD. And trust me, it's going to be weird. and I'm absolutely going to love making it weird. I'm going to try and have as much fun as I possibly can and make this show weird. I'm sorry. That's just how I am. I'm going to make it as weird as possible. We're going to have fun, though. Trust me. I've enjoyed doing this show. Last week, I talked about kind of said my words about it, but I want to kind of recap what I said last week. We started the show back in 2016 as an idea. It was just an idea to kind of put three of us together and kind of shoot the breeze for 2 hours and have a lot of fun talking sports. That show was amazing. That first run of the show was amazing. In case you don't know, we actually started the show back in 2016, the fall of 2016, and then we kind of just let it go the way of the dodo bird for a while. You know, we put it into the show, and then when me and Cody kind of took over, it was me, Cody, and Whitney originally, and that was probably one of the more fun times because we actually started to build that rapport and build that chemistry all together. Because, and here's how I always thought about it. I was the guy that was kind of keeping things together, the glue, if you will. Not necessarily the best glue, but definitely glue. Whitney was our guy who gave us the numbers, gave us the stats, spent a lot of time prepping it out. And I absolutely respect for that. It's definitely something that I've started to pick up a little bit more. And then also, I think we got to talk about how things wound up happening. And, you know, we moved forward. We took a break, came back in the fall. For the following football season, me and Cody started doing it, and we were crushing it, started adding more guests, adding more content to it, slowly but surely becoming an actual show, in all honesty. I enjoyed the hell out of it when me and Cody were doing it. Then I wound up getting Blaine aboard, and the rest, as I say, was history. Blaine was consistently a part of it until LSU football season, whenever LSU was at Tiger Stadium, and he wasn't here. You know, it is what it is. I'm not going to hate him for it, because guess what? You know, it is what it is. The guy likes LSU football. I'm not gonna bash him for that at all. But of course, you know, we got to talk about, and like I said a few weeks ago, me and Raymond Parsh III, we talked about it. By the way, RP3 and Company, 6 to 9 a.m. Monday through Friday. And I said, you know, we need to kind of think about what we're gonna do going forward with him at the helm. And I said, you know what, like, if you want to end the producers, that's fine by me, and like reboot it basically. And that's what I'm gonna do. Consider next week a reboot, and you got to change the way the show is going to be. It's not going to be two or even three guys. It's going to be me, myself, and I, and hopefully we can make some wonderful radio work in 2019 going forward. And I feel like I'm going to mention, I didn't mention this last week, but I think I mentioned this at the end of the year about my favorite interviews that we've had. I got to kind of run through my top five interviews of all time. On 103.7 The Game, I'm ranking 5-1. Number five, I'd say, is my first really big interview. And I'm saying big interview more so because from a local aspect, I think one of my favorite interviews, without a doubt, was Luke Montz. Talking to him about his journey, his first year as a coach in the minor leagues, in the Boston Red Sox organization, his goals. I mean, there's a big article about it on 1037thegame.com. You got to dig deep in the archives for it, but trust me, it is well worth your time to check out. I enjoyed the hell out of writing that story and talking to him about it for a few minutes. He's number five. Number four, I think without a doubt, it's got to be, it's tough to say because I probably could wind up going a number of different directions with the rest of these because they're all so good. I think number four, I'm going to go with Louis Cook right after winning the state title. Him talking about how much longer he's going to go as a head coach in high school football and all that stuff. Like, just so much fun to talk to him about his journey and winning the state title, his team, and how they got to this point. Just awesome always talking to him. But it was great to kind of have him on the day after winning the state title. That's just always fun. And then, of course, number three, I'm going to go Tim Rebo here. Nope, you know, I'm changing my mind. Number three is Conrad Thompson. What happened when? 83 weeks, something to wrestle with Bruce Pritchard. Overall podcasting mogul right before WrestleMania. It was great to talk to him, and I might try and get him on again down the line because I want him on the show before StarCast 2. Because I think there's a lot of interesting stories and a lot of ways we can go about it. Number two, Tim Rebo, right after winning the Southland Conference title. That was awesome. We got to talk to him about it, about that, Billy Napier, and a whole lot more. And then I feel like number one, without a doubt, number one with a bullet, this is the one that I've gotten the most feedback on, period, is the Smacker Miles interview. Everybody has fallen in love with that interview. I got people who were texting me that day, like right after, was like, dude, that was amazing. That was awesome. That's resume worthy, blah, 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 blah. People loved hearing the Smacker Miles interview so much. And I have to say, that was probably one of my favorite interviews. And the one that I put in the most effort into getting, because I was just like, I was getting in touch with her, and like she agreed to it, but it was like not sure if it was going to like work out timing-wise. Thankfully, it did. And that's my favorite interview of all time in the history of the producers. We'll try to get Smacker on down the line. I think a lot of these guys and gals will get back on the show in the not-too-distant future. But guess what? We're done. The producers, it is finally over.
Well, this is the end, beautiful friends.
Well, that about does her. Wraps are all up.
It's been a lot of fun. And we'd like to thank each and every one of you who've made this journey with us.
And it was a pretty good story, don't you think?
Hopefully, we've left you with some good memories.
Well, I hope you folks enjoyed yourselves. Catch you later on down the trail.
Until we meet again, stay gold.
Wake up! The show's over.
Oh yeah! Kick it!